This podcast about Type 4D's Wayfinder Compass was recorded well before the Kickstarter launched. However, it is now up. You can go back it right now. A direct link to the Kickstarter is in the show notes, or if you're listening to this in the even more distant future, make sure to do a late pledge or even just buy it directly from Type 4D's website. You will not regret it. This compass is beautiful and well worth the money. Plus, don't forget, as we'll cover later, you'll get that special healing boon during organized play sessions. Okay, and on with the show. Welcome back to Rise of the Rulelords Unchained. It is your creative and artful Rulelord, Pete, and today I am here to talk about using props with your game. I am someone who much more enjoys playing at the table than virtually, but I realize that many people like to play on their computers either from necessity or just preference. But still, I love being at the table. I like to have my pawn sets up. I like to have my maps up. And every once in a while, it is really cool to have just a little thing to be able to give to my players. Like campaign coins just came out with this whole slew of Pathfinder coins, like from Absalom and of different denominations. And like, how cool is that to be able to like hand that to your players as a reward for whatever they did? It really amplifies the game. And so now I am very lucky to have a guest who is doing even more to amplify the game by making Galarian real, or at least as real as they can. Today, I am really lucky to be able to talk to someone who is making parts of Galarian real, things that you can bring to your table and actually show your players. Joining me is Alan Carey, Creative Director of Type 4D. How are you doing, Alan?
I'm very well, thank you, Pete. Thanks for having me on, and it's really nice to be here.
Yeah, I'm glad that we got the times to work out, because you're living in Australia, whereas I am in the dystopian states of America.
Well, yes, I'm in Australia, where everything is upside down and we live in the future.
Yeah, and everything's trying to kill you.
Everything is currently, at this very moment, trying to kill me. But we should be okay for at least the next 30 or 40 minutes.
Good. You run the company Type 4D, which announced partnership with Paizo not too long ago. Tell us what Type 4D is for people who are unfamiliar with your company and what you do.
Of course, Pete. Type 4D is a small but passionate design studio in Australia. There are several of us who all are very big gamers. We love tabletop role-playing games of all kinds, but we're also super passionate about creating in-world artifacts and props. And we've been going for over a decade now, and we've done work on all kinds of different games. We've won several awards for those props, scenarios, and digital artifacts, both within the role-playing arena and outside of it as well. And we did recently partner up with Paizo in order to start doing what we do for the tabletop role-playing gaming community within the world of Galarian. And it's a super exciting space to be working in, because I find, although I have limited experience of the Pathfinder game, I find the world of Galarian to be a deep and rich and exciting place to be able to explore, that's full, absolutely full of magical artifacts that we want to start putting in people's hands.
Lots of really cool books. One of my prized possessions is the Rise of the Rune Lords Deluxe Edition, which looks like the spell book that the main villain Karzog has. And it's a big, bulky thing, but there is something really satisfying about holding it, kind of pretending like I have that little bit of the Rune Lord there with me. So that's exciting to hear that you're going to be adding more of these artifacts into the real world. One that I can actually see behind you is Mjolnir, hammer from Thor from Marvel. How heavy is that?
No, it's not working.
that's just not, tried to summon it. Didn't work.
Not great for listeners, but funny visually. The Mjolnir is a stainless steel piece of kit that I personally make. Some of the stuff that I make here in the workshop, which is behind me through that door, which you can't see. And it weighs about about 4.5 kilos. So what would that mean? How does that convert?
I don't know. So people can look it up afterwards.
People can look it up. People are clever. They can look that up. Yeah, so
it probably has a good heft to it.
It does, but not too much that you would lose any power on the upswing. So this one's signed by Stan Lee.
Oh, that's incredible. It is so shiny, and that looks exactly like the one from the movies.
It's nice. So a bit of a story behind that, and you can edit all of this out if it's not relevant. But the background of Type 40 is I started on my own about 10 years ago because I'm an engineer and a carpenter by trade. But as I always tell people, I'm a nerd by choice. And basically, I wanted to own a Captain America shield, and there wasn't any Captain America shields in the world that I was happy with. So I decided to make one myself, which I did. I then took it to some conventions and showed some people, and they got very excited about it. So I started making them for collectors and enthusiasts. And then at some point, we got noticed by Disney, and they asked if they could borrow one for some advertising, which was a really exciting moment. We ended up making a Captain America shield for Stan Lee as well, which got presented to him at a convention here in Australia back in 2016, I think it was. So that then led on to further things, which then led on to the Mjolnir. So the next thing I obviously wanted, essentially what I'm telling you is I make things I want, and which is where we find ourselves today.
And you make them really well. I'm not only impressed with the Mjolnir, but the concept for the Wayfinder that you're going to be kickstarting really soon. So you have a lot of experience. What goes into the process of making these? Like, are they handmade? Are they machine built? What do you do to make these quality items?
That's a really good question, actually, Pete. And it's one that is quite deep. As I say, I've got a background in engineering and carpentry, but also in manufacturing as well. And the process of product development or designing a new item is a very interesting one in and of itself. But when you start trying to design and bring to life something that exists only as a fictitious item, which has in itself incumbent expectation by fans, and I'm include myself in that.
Yeah.
There are a whole other set of considerations that you need to start looking at. For instance, Mjolnir can't be lifted up. Now, that's not going to be very good for anybody. Yeah. You know, Aeon stones are supposed to float around your head. Now, I can't do that. There's nobody can do that. So there are two paths that we take when we start looking at a new product that's being drawn out of a fictitious world into our world that has its own incumbent set of values and expectations placed on it. And one of them is obviously the physical considerations and constraints that we have with manufacturing. What material are we going to make out of? How is it going to look? What's it going to feel like? What operations or movements does it need to have? What are the key elements for that item? If you take a really good example that everybody's probably familiar with is the Captain America shield. It has a certain shape, size, look, and you know, you need to hold it on your arm. It's got to have a star on the front. So there are those considerations. Sure. But if you look at some other items, and this is, I have a cosplay background as well. And you see people trying to translate things that can only be drawn or imagined into real life. That's where the real challenge starts to set in. And that's one of my favorite parts.
Sure. I mean, like, yeah, looking at Wayne Reynolds' character arc, just of the iconics for Pathfinder, they have so much stuff on them, so many straps. It would be really difficult to cosplay for that. So how difficult was it making the transition from engineer to crafting your first piece?
It was strangely easy. I was at the time working for myself and then decided I wanted to do it. And so I had all of these contacts in various companies around where I was living at the time that were engineering firms, materials, manufacturers, suppliers. And I just started going, talking to them and saying, I want to do this. And I would show them what I wanted to do. And some of them, you could tell, didn't quite understand what it was or had no insight into that world. And because it was left of center of their core business, they were putting it in a too hard basket. And that's understandable because you've got some guy that just rocks up and says, hey, I want to make Captain America shield or I want to make a Thor hammer. I'm like, please leave my office now. And then, but you know, you've hit absolute, you've struck gold when you go and see somebody and they look at you and their eyes light up because they're a fan too.
Right.
And then you explain the concept and then it's then about a collaboration in how are we going to make this work? Mm-hmm. And that's what's happened all the way along up until this point where we're now partnering with Paizo. It's always been about collaboration in order to create what. And we've got to remember the people that run these companies, me, whoever, you know, yourself, everybody in the community, we're all fans of the games. So it's always been about collaboration, about how can we make this thing real.
You said you had a cosplay background as well. For people who want to go about creating their own props, tell us a little bit about the process of improving your crafting skills so that people can try to make like the best version of the vision that they have in their heads.
The simplest and shortest answer, and I'll give you a slightly less flippant one, is make lots of mistakes. Just the more mistakes you make, the better you'll become. I'm a strong believer that all of the learning is in the mistakes.
So just go for it and try your best and you'll get better every time.
Every time you make a mistake, you'll learn from it, 100%. If you've got a vision in your head, take that vision out and create that vision. Look at it and refine it, because the first one you'll do will not match and you'll be probably disappointed. But the 10th one you do will, absolutely. There's no shortcuts to being good at something. You've got to just do it over and over and over. And my one of my processes is that if something goes wrong, I take a step back and learn how to rectify that mistake. And one of the biggest examples of that would be the second Captain America shield I made. I wanted to look like it had been, I created this shield and I made a mistake. It was perfect. I'd sprayed it, I'd done it, it was finished, and I got a cloth to dust it down. And as I dusted the surface of it, the cloth caught on the edge of the star and it peeled the star away from the shield. So after many hours of work, I'd ruined it and I nearly cried, honestly. I just did not know what to do.
But you learned from that and you obviously made something that like was good enough to give to Stan Lee. So,
well, directly out of that, Pete, I stripped it back and I began to strip all of the paint off the surface. And in doing so, I learned the technique immediately, saw that what I was doing looked like a battle-damaged weathered shield that had been hit by bullets. So as I went through the layers of paint, it revealed a beautiful weathering technique that I'd not been able to do before. So I just took the vision, boldly gave it a go, and the second shield I made was a beautiful weathered battle damage shield, which I still make to this day using the same technique, but without the peeling of the star at the beginning.
Right. So even out of a mistake, sometimes things can look tremendous.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. So anybody that's looking out there to get better at what they're doing, Just keep doing it. And also, there's a wealth of information out there on the internet, and the community is fabulous. Every nerd community I've been part of is so helpful. There's lots of learnings online. And if you're looking to make your own props, send me a message. I'll give you information. I love this stuff.
That's a great invitation. I hope listeners take you up on it. So now, speaking of props, we're going into the world of gaming. Things like the Wayfinder, they are, of course, things that people can have for decoration, but I think that they're much more things people would want to have at the table and be able to play with. But a lot of people are moving to virtual tabletops. So do you think that physical products still have a place in gaming as gaming atmosphere, or are they best as background, you know, during camera calls?
I'm a great believer in both digital and physical props. We at Type 40 make both. I see that the space of tabletop role-playing game has expanded. Digital tabletop role-playing has not shrunk the world of role-playing, it's expanded it. And as for if physical props still have a place, I'd say yes. I'd say definitely. There is a sense of immersion and realness to something that you can hold, something that weighs the expected weight, something that when you pick it up, you say, I'm now holding a real Wayfinder in my hand. Yeah. Now, that connection and immersion to the game, that anchoring in the world of Galarian is usually in our mind. Mm-hmm. It usually in a theatre of the mind. But if you can then both have it in a theatre of the mind and in your hand at the same time, that just adds a layer. And I can feel myself getting excited about that as I speak.
Yeah, I have to agree. The thing that I love, especially when I'm gaming, is, you know, the feel of dice in my hands and actually like rolling it. I've never gotten the same satisfaction even from the prettiest digital dice set that I can get. So I drive with that a lot. But let's talk about this Wayfinder that you're going to be releasing pretty soon. So you've been talking about it for a while on social media. I've been following that, and every once in a while there'd be like really cool sketch, and it just got me more and more intrigued. And now you actually have versions of the final product, it looks like. So what went into designing it, and what did you do to come up with the final creation?
We do have prototypes now, and it's been quite a journey. So the design process, as I say, now Type 40 has grown, and there's a few of these working together now. And our concept designer and illustrator, Simon, and also our sort of chief line editor and law person, editor, Phil, who's basically knows everything about everything role-playing games. We all got together and we talked with Paizo, and this is where the collaboration comes in, is we know what we know. We also know what we don't know. We wanted to collaborate to make this as close to something that would be in world as possible. So the first step of the process is to gather information. So we will do a lot of research. We'll look at all the books, all the sources. We'll get information from the community, get information directly from Paizo, say, okay, what does this need to do? If you could say three things, what must it be? Okay, it's a compass. So you go, Pete. If you can say three things, what must it be?
Compass. I know some things have a light source, and then they store aeon stones.
Yeah, so there's your three things. Compass, light source, aeon stones. So then we go, all right, so it has to be those things. Now let's go back and talk about those physical real-world constraints that we have. Okay, can we do a compass? Yes. Can we do a light source? Possibly. Can we do aeon stones? Yes. All right, okay, we got our answers to that. Let's dig deeper and take the next step. And this is even before we start, you know, sketching it out and seeing what it can look like. And then we come back with our considerations, and you have to really moderate your requirements, because at the end of the day, what we want is for everybody to buy one. That's the long and short of it. We want, you know, everybody in the community to have a Wayfinder because it's a cool thing. And we want to make them accessible. So, you know, does accessible mean a Wayfinder that's going to cost $500? Probably not. So we start paring back our considerations. Okay, so we, you know, at one point we were thinking maybe we can have a chargeable wayfinder that sits on a charging station and it's wireless and it can point to certain places in the world and it has, lights in it. And you're like, no, that's gonna cost too much. So we come up with our final design brief. And unfortunately, we had to pull the light out of it because there's lots of certification considerations for electronic items. And as a first product for the community, we want to get it right. We don't want to get halfway there. So we come up with our design spec and our brief. That brief then starts getting sketched out. And then once we've got a good idea of what that concept will be, that's when the back and forth will start. Okay, tweak this, move that, change that. Let's have a rotary bezel on it. How can we push the boundaries of this? And then once we've done that back and forth, we'll end up with a final concept illustration. And that's when the prototyping starts.
In your own words, tell us what the end wayfinder looks like and what features it has for people who haven't gone to the your Twitter. I'm still going to call it Twitter. I don't care what Elon Musk says.
I'm with you, Pete.
At Type 40 PTY. It is beautiful. I highly recommend, if you are curious about it, to go check out their Twitter and see the prototype. But in your own words, tell us what it looks like.
It is a gorgeous, high luster, plated nickel alloy object with weight and substance that, when opened, has a functioning compass inside, a rotary bezel, similar to that you would find on a watch, with the zodiac symbols of Galarian on it that you can turn, that has a very satisfying click as you do so. The inside of the lid is a rich, deep blue enamel with flecks of silver in to represent the star fields, through which there's a hole that you can see the mounted Aeon stone sitting on top of the lid. The Aeon stones are mounted in a brass mount, which can be removed and replaced with different coloured Aeon stones. And on the bottom is the lodge symbol in green and gold. The entire thing is about two and a half inches across. It fits perfectly in the hand. And honestly, having designed this, or helped design this as part of the team, I cannot stop picking them up and holding them.
I mean, it sounds like a perfect fidget device to have in your hand, like switching out the Aeon stones. I can hear the click from here of that, and that sounds very satisfying. Yeah, opening and closing it, you know, watching the wobble of the compass. And I looked at a picture of what the artwork for a wayfinder was, and your product is exceptionally close to the final version. Like, there's like a couple of differences, but it looks like a wayfinder. And if they had never published artwork of a wayfinder and I had only seen your thing, I would say that is a wayfinder. It looks better than just like some plain old compass. It's really shiny. I love the blue inside of it. And yeah, I saw very recently you posted that there are many colors for the Aeon stones. And people know that there are different types of Aeon stones, not just red or white. There's teal, and they all have different effects. So you switch those out. But I love that feature.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite things, is that we've managed to not only create what we felt the Wayfinder should be, but it feels right. People see it, say, that's what I expected. And that's ideal. Because we all have these expectations of what in-world artifacts should not only look like but feel like. And when you can translate, and this is what I was talking about earlier, about that translation of the fictional incumbent ideas of an artifact from inside a world into reality, that translation, you can lose things in translation sometimes. So there's as much consideration goes into that side of things when we design, as there is goes into, you know, what's the material, what's the color.
So pretty soon you're going to have that Kickstarter and people will be able to put in money so that you can get your own. What kind of stuff can people expect to see available on Kickstarter?
We are going to keep it very simple. We want the first product to be accessible and available. We want the Kickstarter to go well, and we don't want to flood ourselves by overcomplicating the Kickstarter with stretch goals and add-ons and things like that. So for this first one, we're going to probably stick with just the Wayfinder and a set of stones. We are currently considering a couple of stretch goals, which we might include, but I don't want to announce them now because if we pull them, people might get disappointed. And it doesn't mean that you won't see them in the future with other new products as well, because this is not the, you know, we've got to think about the long term. There's a lot of possibilities for us. And if we can just nail this first one and everybody's happy, that will be a success for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Are there any future Pathfinder or Starfinder projects that you're able to talk about or at least hint at, perhaps?
I would love to. I will openly talk about our intentions for the next product. We are hoping that once, you know, if the community responds really well and everybody wants us to do more, which I'm hoping they will, after the Wayfinder is done, I think it's a natural progression to create a cartographer's kit.
Okay. And cartography is charting land.
Yeah, right? Map making. And so in the Pathfinder Society book, there's a cartographer's kit item, and it lists what is in that item. So that's a very easy pick for us. It also fits nicely in with the idea of what the Pathfinder Society is. It also has a lot of game utility as well. And we are huge on game utility. You mentioned earlier on, do you think that physical items are now only for the shelf? I thought physical items have never been for the shelf. And I love making beautiful things, but I want them to have game utility as well. So I don't want people to get a Wayfinder, pick it up and go, that's nice, and then put it back down again. For instance, the Wayfinder already will have in-game utility as an other item during organized play for a free heal between encounters. Right. So if you own a physical Wayfinder and you take it to organized play, you've already got additional benefit from owning that.
That's awesome.
That's something that we've agreed upon with Paizo. They've been super supportive. I cannot speak highly enough of that team. We are then going to work on further game utility with other objects that we bring out. That all is dependent on timelines and, you know, product development. And of course, you know, we'll be working with Paizo to make sure that all fits. But I think that a cartographer's kit with game utility that people can take to the table, use at the table, not only in-game, but as a really cool, useful player aid as well. Maybe somewhere for your dice, maybe a notebook, maybe a map-making thing. It could be, there's all kinds of possibilities. So that's definitely something we'll be looking at.
The only other common item that I can think that would have more utility is the healer's kit. Is that?
Oh yeah.
But that's basically just a first aid kit, which I think everyone should have one stuffed in their car somewhere for safety.
What a great idea, Pete, for a convention kit, a first aid convention kit, healer's kit, and it's got like a bottle of water in it.
That would be great. So a lot of exciting projects, very exciting Kickstarter. I love that there's going to be an additional boon for having the Wayfinder there with you in society play. As someone who loves to GM for society at conventions, that's going to be fantastic. So where can people find the Kickstarter and where can they find more of you and Type 40?
As you mentioned earlier, you can find us on Twitter at Type40PTY. And there are links there to the Kickstarter. The Kickstarter itself has a pre-launch page, which is currently available. So you can find us on Kickstarter as well. There's a pre-launch page. And if you went on and searched for Wayfinder Compass for Paizo's Pathfinder, you could hit the notify me on launch button and then you'll be told when we're coming. If you want to find us on the internet, we're at type40.com.au, and you can also find Type 40 on Facebook and give us a follow there. And if anybody's into props and wants to know more or just discuss them, just send me a message. I love this stuff.
Fantastic. Well, I really hope that you have a great turnout from the Wayfinder, because I know that I definitely want to get one, have that on my table and, you know, frankly, at my desk while I'm working. That looks great. So thank you so much for coming on. I'm looking forward to the Kickstarter, and I hope to see a lot more props for Pathfinder and Starfinder from you guys in the future.
Pete, you've been an absolute pleasure to talk to. Thank you very much. And if anybody out there in the Paizo community wants to drop Pete a message about what props they'd like to see us make, please do.
Excellent. Hopefully all of you will go to the Kickstarter page, click notify so that you can be there right on launch day. I will have that in the show notes. Let's have a great turnout. Let's keep physical products going strong in Pathfinder and Starfinder. But until the next session, remember, don't let the rules rule you. We'll be right back.